Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertletail from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is John Rush. John is an adjunct professor at Georgetown Law School, the principal of DTG Risk and Compliance as well. He has a long background both working in-house in compliance and as a prosecutor. John, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks very much, Adam.
So we're going to talk about, honestly, what's one of my favorite topics in the world of compliance, which is not sort of the bread and butter issue, but sort of the larger macro issues from a really human perspective, which is behavioral science. All the research that's being done there in psychology, behavioral economics, and everywhere else that really, I think, casts great insights into the way people think and has really profound impact for compliance. I'm convinced already, but can you share with some others why behavioral science really is relevant to corporate compliance?
Sure. I think, and part of my experience in this regard comes from my having been a federal prosecutor for many years and looking at how people behave in different kinds of situations involving illegality, whether it's inside corporations or in other settings. And I think as I came to prosecute and then coordinate with others on prosecuting cases, I realized that the traditional view is usually it's the problem is a organization has a few bad apples in the barrel. It's just that people are bad and you just have to find the bad people and root them out and everything is great. I think one of the great things that you see, and there's now very substantial literature in those areas you described, like social psychology, behavioral economics, and so on, is that the reality is people may be good in general and still end up for a variety of reasons either acquiescing in or even becoming actively complicit in ethical and even civil or criminal violations of law without being inherently evil. So I think one of the things that behavioral science in general is now being increasingly recognized for in the private sector as well as in government is the insights that it provides into why people do the things they do, and as a result, what you can do to help prevent or spot certain kinds of behaviors that behavioral science helps you to identify in advance and maybe reduce or eliminate.
Tell us more about how you got involved in this. You mentioned, for example, your experience as a prosecutor.
Sure. Some years back, when I was prosecuting a number of cases that had international fraud schemes at their core, I was finding situations where a lot of fraud victims were behaving in ways that you wouldn't think would be logical or, you know, sensible. But as it happened, years before I had taken an undergraduate course in social psychology from one of the great professors in the field, John Darley. And once I started going back to refresh my memory about some of these issues regarding the psychology of influence and what kinds of mental shortcuts people could fall into, I realized that it provided a new set of insights into why victims and increasingly criminals behaved the way they did in certain situations. I took a lot of that to heart when, after I left the Justice Department, I moved on to Wells Fargo to head their anti-bribery and corruption program there and recognized that many of these same issues that now are kind of part and parcel of what you see in these areas like social psychology, cognitive psychology, behavioral economics, are useful to understand, you know, not just in terms of seeing what happened in cases that actually get prosecuted, but also in what you can do in a corporate setting to identify the potential for certain kinds of behaviors where people fall into these kinds of mental shortcuts or improper influences on their thinking and do more either through training or other measures to help reduce the likelihood that people fall into these shortcuts and as a result end up perhaps steering things in the direction of potential problems for that company.
So let's go down that road then in terms of potential problems. You know, are there some examples of potentially risky areas in corporate settings that could be better understood, identified, and really avoided with the help of behavioral science?
Sure. Let me pick out a couple of issues that I think come up repeatedly in corporate settings. And these are not situations that involve any particular industry or particular category of transaction. These are kind of universal types of behaviors that can crop up in any corporate setting. One example out of social psychology of what's called the bystander effect. Very simply put, that's a situation where if you're in a group of people, for example, in a large meeting, and someone who's especially in a position of authority says, this is the way we need to go. We need to meet our numbers for the end of the quarter, or we've got to rescue this contract. And you can sense that there's something wrong, maybe ethically, maybe even legally. But if you see that nobody else around the table or nobody else on the phone call is speaking up, people often fall into this assumption that, well, if nobody else is speaking up, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there isn't something that's really a problem. And if everybody else on that call or in that meeting has the same reaction, you know, assuming that negative response equals at least acquiescence or approval, that's one of the ways in which people can remain silent and yet inadvertently acquiesce in a course of conduct that really can be problematic down the road. Another example is something that's called context confusion. This can come up very simply where somebody in one side of a transaction is thinking, the person who's on the other side of this transaction is thinking the same way I am, like that we have the same goals, we just want to make for a profitable transaction or a profitable relationship. And in fact, the people on the other side of the table, so to speak, may be thinking, yes, I want to do this deal, but I need to get something for myself, like a kickback, a bribe, or so on. And yet, the people inside the company who are negotiating with this person might be thinking, well, we're really all after the same thing. And so you inadvertently start to kind of dial down your sensitivity to the possibility that this person may actually have improper, if not illegal, motives underlying that. Again, it's something that is easy to fall into and hard to recognize unless you know what to look for.
I was just going to say, you know, as you're talking both of these, what's interesting is how the mind fills in the gaps when there's silence in the room and may not be doing it in the proper way.
No, that's very true. And that's one of the reasons why I suggest, as part of your general planning for any kind of corporate training, you know, whether it's on anti-corruption or anti-money laundering or any other compliance area, as I said, these are sort of general behaviors. So one of the things that you can do is work into your compliance training these concepts, you know, in other words, front these issues and say, look, this is what some people may do in corporate settings. Don't make this mistake. If you feel that there's something that needs to be voiced, by all means, speak up. It certainly helps, of course, if you've got C-level officials mirroring that kind of endorsement, so people really do feel comfortable speaking up. But I think it's important that it be called out explicitly so people might realize, oh, gosh, maybe other people like me would fall into this, but I will speak up if I feel that there's an important point that has to be addressed, especially if it's a problem that could be a risk for the company.
Okay, great. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to divert. You were about to say, before I interrupted, one third thing.
Oh, yeah, a quick thing as well. This is something that actually has gotten more and more visibility in business schools and in private sector companies based on B-school courses. The concept very simply is ethical fading. The professors who first came up with this concept identified situations where even if you're actively engaged in talking about something that has risk, something that can inadvertently happen is based on how the discussion's going, you know, how worried you might be, for example, at your company, you know, maybe suffering a potential loss if the deal doesn't go through, you start inadvertently redefining certain issues that have ethical implications and redefine them in terms of business concerns. That is, you know, you sort of characterize things so that it's not like you've said there is no risk here, but maybe you recategorize it as maybe a situation with a business risk. That is, the risk of loss to the company is really what's at stake here. And the more you start down this road, again, through inadvertence, not willful intent to misbehave, you end up in a situation where you've now unwittingly helped to push that company or a particular program or plan down a road that could be very problematic for the company. Here again, it's important for corporate training in a wide variety of compliance areas to bring out this idea and say, this is what has happened to other people. This actually has been documented in other situations. So let's make sure that we don't overlook or minimize the ethical or legal ramifications of issues just because it may be an especially important issue to the company.
Yeah, well, always good advice, because you know, we don't often, whether we know it or not, start believing that the ends justify the means. So how can corporate compliance officers, in addition to this one really good piece of advice you just gave there about, you know, raising the issue, put some of these concepts to use in their corporate compliance programs?
I think there are a couple of things that are really fairly easy to work in. You know, the first step, of course, is having corporate compliance officers recognize the relevance of these kinds of findings and information that are out there in the field of behavioral science, and then just working them in ways that sort of front the issues, make them explicit for employees. You know, for example, as I described before, if you're talking about compliance issues in general for any kind of corporate compliance program, if you sort of front this idea that some people may fall into the situation where they're thinking, well, gee, the business interests are really what are paramount here, and ethical fading is a thing that happens with other people, we, the company, want to make sure that you, employees, you, officers, and executives, recognize that's just a general trait of human behavior, but we don't want things to happen in this company by happenstance or misunderstanding or mistakenly, you know, holding back on your genuine concerns. In other words, part of what you have to do is, in a company, not only say that you have a speak up program, say in general that you want employees to speak up, I think you have to incorporate into your training these types of concepts, even use them, for example, as hypothetical situations and say, look, you know, this is what could happen. This is what's been borne out in real life situations. We don't want you to go down that road. So if you feel it in yourself, or you think others in your situation, you know, in intra-corporate meetings or discussions on the phone, are sensing something along these lines, we want you to speak up. We want you not to lose sight of your concerns for ethical behavior, along with the other concerns you have about the business side of these equations. In other words, the more that you can make people accept that this is, you know, not particular to me as a corporate employee or even to this company, but you're helping people to recognize, okay, well, if other people have fallen into this trap, I sure don't want to make that mistake. I sure don't want to be the person who stays silent and then maybe inadvertently let something go down a road we don't want. I think it becomes, frankly, more salient, more easy for corporate employees and executives to recognize that these are behaviors that we don't want to lead the company into a bad situation through inadvertence, and instead, you know, positively encourage people to speak up and say, we want you to speak about these issues. You know, how we ultimately resolve this may take a lot of discussion, but we don't want people to hold back on things because they're assuming things about either what other people think or what they should think in these situations.
Well, this has been great insight. Obviously, this came from a lot of research on your part. Are there books or articles that you think would be a great introduction to behavioral science for people who want to learn more?
Sure. I'll pick out three as very quick takeaways. All these are by professors who have been leaders in these fields. Robert Cialdini and his book Influence, Professor Richard Thaler, his book Nudge, and Professor Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. The latter two, by the way, got Nobel Prizes for their work in this field, so you have some reason to think that this is really significant, really worthwhile reading.
Great. And if I could add to that, just one of my favorites, which is Dan Ariely, who actually studied under Daniel Kahneman. His book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, I think is also well worth the read. Well, Jonathan, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today and give us this insight into human behavior. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletaub, who's getting over a cold, which is why I have a crazy voice, saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.